Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for November 19th, 2017. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. And just setting up for later, our guest will be Doug Kaplan. Doug Kaplan is with Gravis Marketing, who does a lot of polling around the country. He also runs the Orlando Political Observer, so we're going to be talking a lot of Florida political talk, but maybe getting some other topics in since they have a brand-new poll of Alabama, and that'll be about 20 minutes in to the show. But until then, topics keep coming up. In Alabama, the hottest race going continues to get more fuel to the fire, if you will. More information coming out, more analysis, people thinking thoughts, and more poll numbers. So let's kind of start there since that was a big topic for us. It did not slow down. Catherine, what do you think about what's happened with Roy Moore, Doug Jones this week?
Well, I mean, it just keeps – Roy Moore just keeps digging himself deeper and deeper and all, but his supporters continue to support him. You know, the governor came out, I guess, yesterday or the day before and was like, well, I'm troubled by these allegations and I don't have any reason not to believe these women, but I'm still going to vote for him. So but it looks like Doug Jones's numbers are creeping up and it should be a good. It should be a late night on December 12th, watching those returns come in.
Yes, Tim, Doug Jones' numbers are creeping up, and Roy Moore's just a creep. I do see that there is a difference. I will say for the Republicans, if you're in the state of Alabama, you seemingly defend anything that comes out. But if you are outside the state of Alabama, you at least see the problems that are Roy Jones. Roy Moore. Why do I keep saying the boxer? Roy Moore. What's the difference between being in state and out of state there?
Well, I think that the state party there just basically has told people either you support Roy Moore or you pack your bags because you will be nothing in Republican politics in the state of Alabama. I think they have just essentially read them the Riot Act, and he's their nominee, and they are going to stick with him. They figure it's better to stick with him and not incur the wrath of his base down the line. So I think it's a self-preservational thing, even though that, as you alluded to, polls are now showing that Doug Jones is winning. Our own guest, that's going to be on in a little while, has a poll that will be saying the same thing, but this is this has been the political story that's basically knocked all others off the pages for the last 2 weeks. This thing has even been bigger than I think the overall general tone of things that are going on that has caused problems for Roy Moore. It's caused problems for a lot of others too, including Al Franken. But Roy Moore is like the Watergate of these stories, right?
Yes, and we will in Al Franken later. We have plenty to talk about him, and I almost thought about leading off, but Roy Moore just seems like there's so much there, if you will. But, you know, there's an old adage. Sometimes you lose the battle but win the war. if you're an Alabama Republican or a National Republican, and I think some of the National Republicans see this, you know how bad this looks. You know how bad this is. Not even how it looks, just it's bad. And so you say, you know, if Doug Jones serves in the Senate for the remainder of the term, you know, roughly, let's say, 2 years, but we save our face, we save our party from this type of embarrassment, maybe that's better. Every other elected official in Alabama on a statewide level is a Republican. We'll elect Republicans in the foreseeable future, given the current political dynamics. What would be so bad about losing one race for a greater good, Catherine?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that's very good, very logical, but I think they view Democrats as worse than a Republican pedophile. Honestly, I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be part of it, that the D is the unforgivable sin, because we continue to see more and more. One of the things we didn't discuss last week was a lot of people said, well, this is, you know, he said, she said, there's no real proof, this, that, and the other. Well, then we get this high school yearbook. Now, this is obviously not a smoking gun, but who in the world that's not a teacher or a school employee signs someone's high school yearbook when they're 32 years old? And, you know, so many details about where the girl worked, because or the now 50-year-old woman worked. She worked at the old Hickory House. Roy Moore put that in the signing of the yearbook. And he had said, oh, I don't even know where that restaurant was. There's so much fire here that would substantiate some level of proof. Tim, you know, doesn't this change things?
Doesn't it change things? There's a lot of stuff happened to Roy Moore's campaign lately. All of it bad. I mean, the Republican National Committee has cut financial ties with the campaign. Moore has chosen to respond by trying to discredit his accusers with little or no effect for him, unfortunately. They've come out with all this alternative nonsense. You know, you've heard about them, fake calls, texts, Facebook, Twitter, but a lot of it's just mythology. How about the Bernie Bernstein, Jewish reporter from the New York Times, supposedly leaving messages for people? And of course, there's no such person. And they don't. The New York Times has nothing to do with this. So they've chosen to push back against the Washington Post, the Republican establishment, and other enemies, both imagined and real. Threatening lawsuits. There's another favorite pushback. Right now, there's 9 female accusers now. The numbers just keep growing. This just keeps getting worse, as Catherine mentioned. They have about 30 corroborating witnesses to what these women have said. And we have the story put together by a multiple Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper. And on the other side, well, we have Roy Moore. I mean, so how's the trajectory of this race going to change back? That's what I would like to know. If it's trending toward his opponent, as it seems to be, what's going to swing it back the other way?
It doesn't seem like there's anything at this point that could, unless voters are just like, Doug Jones is a Democrat, Roy Moore's a Republican, it doesn't matter. Now I still firmly believe there are going to be people that are so repulsed by Roy Moore that they can't vote for him, but they are so repulsed at the theory of, or the idea of voting for a Democrat, that they can't vote for Doug Jones. Therefore, they're just going to stay home. And that's going to really help Doug Jones as much as anything in this race. And at the same time, some Democrats that might not always get out are going to be more motivated to come out because they have a chance to win, and they want to make sure that Roy Moore doesn't win. I think that's going to reflect as much as, you know, taking people from column A to B or D to R, R to D. Catherine, are you hearing any more? Because I know you work where you have ties to a lot of states. Are you hearing any new information about how people may get out the vote or anything like that?
I haven't heard anything new, but I agree with you. I think that's the going to be the you know, calculator is how many people just can't hold their nose and vote for either one, either you know, Republicans who just can't vote for Roy Moore but can't really put up you know, vote for Doug Jones either, so they stay home, and then how many, you know, somewhat active, you know, Democratic or Democratic-leaning voters who might not normally vote because it's a runoff and it's the holidays and blah, 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 end up voting. So I think that's really – and I think it's really hard to poll that. So I think we're going to – you know, like I said, we're going to be up late on the 12th watching these numbers come in.
Yeah. Tim, you mentioned the Bernie Bernstein call. I wonder who pays their money for that kind of thing, because the clear impact of that call, I'm not sure what it would be, although it seemed to just, you know, be an embarrassment to the state, thinking that anybody would even fall for that. And it was, by the way, Bernie Bernstein was supposedly from the Washington Post who did the initial story. But the Washington Post keeps getting attacked, but it's not the Washington Post of Woodward and Bernstein. It's Jeff Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post. Now, I find it so strange that Amazon is this company that has this, you know, huge golden egg everybody wants, including Birmingham, if not other Alabama municipalities, and you have all these Alabama political leaders attacking Jeff Bezos and Amazon. Tim, do you think that's kind of strange?
Yeah, well, first of all, I would bet two-thirds of those people don't know that Amazon has anything to do with the Washington Post or anybody else. And secondly, you made allusion to a curious line of attack by Moore supporters. They're saying, oh, well, these calls are actually put out by the Washington Post or the New York Times. Now, what I'm scratching my head doing is trying to figure out exactly why they would do such a thing. But they're saying that they're doing the calls, and then they're accusing Moore's campaign of being involved in the calls. But it's really the newspapers who are doing all of it. I'm not even sure I'm following this. Are y'all following it? It has gone bizarre land.
Yeah, and I don't think the person that put together this thing had logic on the brain. Catherine?
I think the Bezos Amazon thing is pretty I've seen that tweet, you know, the Bezos, Amazon, Washington Post. Okay, first of all, I don't think Amazon really has much to do with the Washington Post. It's Jeff Bezos that bought it, not Amazon. I mean, I know he's founder of Amazon, but I really don't think there's that much connection between Amazon and the Washington Post. I may be wrong, but I think it's Bezos more than Amazon. So I think that's a little bit of a stretch. And I also don't think Birmingham or Mobile or, Montgomery are really in the running for the Amazon headquarters. So I don't think that's in their minds. I don't think like Tim said, I don't think most people know that, but I really honestly don't think those cities are really in the running for that. And that if they're being honest with themselves, they realize that. But I do think it's interesting that they keep I've seen a number of quotes from conservatives who call it the Bezos Washington Post. Bezos is not a traditional, he's not a huge progressive or anything. I mean, he's not you know, some of these other Hollywood and tech people who are automatically associated, like Barbara Streisand, automatically associated with the Democratic Party. So I think that's an interesting take for them. You know, I just think it's interesting.
I don't know, understand exactly why you'd want to make an enemy of someone who's not a clear and obvious enemy, that is one of the richest people in the country. You know, why tick that person off if they're not purposely, you know, they're not already against you? It does seem kind of strange. Now, let's talk about this whole idea of a write-in candidacy, Roy Moore. They get Luther Strange to resign, kicking out this special election and having another special election. Now, given what they did with the Supreme Court seat, anything is plausible in my mind. It doesn't appear that Roy Moore is going to step aside, so therefore that would split the write-in vote and the Roy Moore vote, so that doesn't sound plausible. But the idea of Luther Strange stepping down and then forcing another special election – Tim, is this even a plausible scenario?
No. No. The governor said no. Yeah, that's just not going to happen. Would that create a firestorm? Not even sure that would be legal at this point. I mean, people, if they have early voting, people have probably already started voting. I know they've sent out absentee ballots by now. I mean, the process has already started. So how could you constitutionally stop the process? Well, I don't think constitutionally that you could. So I think that'd be in violation of several state and federal laws. And you heard Catherine say the governor will never go for it.
I think the idea they're floating is to go ahead and have the election, but then have Luther Strange resign so that they can have another special election. But the governor is saying, no way, this is the election. We're not having another one.
And that's how it should be. And Kay Ivey, even though we may not be happy with maybe her continued endorsement of him, at least at different times like this when she's been a good official, and she's did that handle in the end of the Robert Bentley situation as well. So at times she's shown some leadership, and kudos to her on that.
You know, I was just going to make this comment. I hate to say it, but those guys over there in Alabama, they seem to really be party boys, don't they? The governors?
Most definitely. Because people like Tim Scott, Mitch McConnell, others have actually stepped up and said, you know, what he's done is not okay.
Right.
There's problems here. But let me go ahead. We're not going to switch total gears off of this
yet.
Because we have our guest. Our guest is coming on for the first time, Doug Kaplan of Gravis Marketing and the Orlando Political Observer. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine, Doug.
Hey, how are you?
Yes, glad to have you on. And, Doug, even though we told two things you're involved with, we always like to start off with a new guest. Tell us a little bit about your political background or bio in general.
Yeah, Gravis Marketing is a nonpartisan political polling firm. We release a lot of public polls. We also do private polls for industry. We're located in Orlando, Florida. So we specialize in Florida, but we also, work throughout the country.
Yes, and you can tell us a little about maybe anything else you did in politics or even a little bit about the Orlando Political Observer.
Yeah, the Orlando Political Observer is one of the top political sites here in Central Florida. We're involved in most of the races in Florida. We have national clients, we have non-disclosures, so we don't really talk about them. But we have tons of clients. We have relationships with multiple media organizations we did polls with last year. We did predict Trump would win last year in the Midwest. We've been doing it since 2010.
Yes, all right. Well, let's, now we got the bio out of the way. Before we get into Florida, one of the main things we wanted to discuss, because Sunshine State has a ton of competitive races, wanted to ask you about your new poll that you did with Big League Politics on the Alabama special election. Tell us what your findings showed.
Sure. We did two polls. We did one 10 days ago. It showed more up two. We did it another one this week, and we showed a 7-point swing, and we showed Doug Jones up 5 points, 47% to 42%. So there was a phenomenal swing within the last week.
Well, and I will say this. I noticed that you released the cross tabs, and they were extensive. I opened it on my phone. They were so extensive, I really needed a computer to fully see them. So I want to ask you a question. What was the number you found? Which group of people accounted for that swing from Moore to Jones?
You know, really where the swing went, Moore only actually gained 1% in the poll. It was the undecided column that went up from 6 to 11. And the election really is about Luther Strange voters. Remember, they voted against Roy Moore twice. To think they're going to vote for a Democrat probably isn't going to happen. But are they going to stay home? That's probably the most likely thing to happen. And if that happens, the Democrat Doug Jones will win.
Yes, and we kind of postulated that early in the show, both Catherine and I. Well, I have Catherine and Tim as my co-host, and they're going to get into the Florida politics. So I'm going to pass it to Catherine, then Tim, and then when they're going to come back to me, and I bet there'll be something left to discuss in Florida. Catherine?
Thanks for being on with us tonight. We really appreciate it. We always like having a new guest.
Thank you.
And we always like to hear from people in Florida because there's always so much going on there. I wanted to ask you about the large number of new potential voters coming to Florida from Puerto Rico. There's been a lot of numbers tossed around, like something like 50,000. They're anticipating 50,000 new voters. And what do you think the impact on these 2018 races might be with the and apparently they're expected to be largely Democratic voters. So have you had a chance to think about that or look at that? And what are your thoughts about?
Absolutely. You know, there's been hundreds of thousands of Puerto Ricans that have come since the storm, and many more are expected. Now, if you look at prior voting patterns, about 70% vote Democrat. And where the folks in Puerto Rico are moving are really swing counties, counties like Polk County, Osceola, Seminole County, Tampa, which is not a county that previously had a lot of residents from Puerto Rico, has seen an influx. So radically can change the politics in Tampa, Pinellas County, and Hillsborough. So you can see, it's very likely we'll see a radical shift in Florida politics over the next few years and the next decade.
And what do you think do you think there'll be a strategy for either party, either for Democrats to do things to engage those voters and Republicans will do things to try to engage them as well? I mean, do you think they're going to be the voters that everyone's going, you know, targeting, or do you think they'll just leave them alone and hope that they vote? Like, well, how do you think it does change the strategy of the parties and the candidates?
Absolutely, and especially in smaller races, you know, state house, state senate. You know, the governor, a Republican, has been very welcoming, but what's expected is that a lot of the people are going to blame the Republican administration, the presidential administration, for what's happened in Puerto Rico with the electric, et cetera. So the first thing is getting the people registered. So you'll see a big effort on getting the people registered. You know, the campaigns will have Spanish, reach out to the community, and it'll be a massive get out the vote, in these targeted areas. That can radically change it. You know, you should have hundreds of thousands of new voters. I mean, it's it's just something we haven't seen since the boat lift in Miami, and these people are already citizens automatically. So it will radically change the politics, and it should benefit the Democrats.
Well, that'll be a nice relief for those of us watching, those Democrats like us watching Florida. I'm going to go ahead and pass it to Tim for his question. Thanks so much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Good evening, Mr. Kaplan. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having
me. I have been looking and looking and looking and looking and looking at your governor's race down there next year, and I keep coming to the same conclusion. This race is pretty much wide open. Am I right about that?
It's really wide open on both sides, the Republican and Democratic side.
If you had to say X person in the Democratic primary and X person in the Republican primary would be a favorite in the race, who would that be?
So on the Democratic side, right now I think Gwen Graham is the front runner. John Morgan, very popular lawyer, Morgan & Morgan, he's told us, you know, well over 70% chance he'll run. If he runs, he'll give her a run for her money. So it's an even chance. Either it'll be Morgan or Graham. On the Republican side, Putnam is the favorite. However, he's looked at as establishment. You have a lot of people that are running on the Republican side. And, you know, you might have Ron DeSantis, a popular congressman out of Daytona Beach run. And you have four or five people in the race. Someone with 30 or 35% could win. I wouldn't be surprised to see Putnam lose. He's the favorite, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him lose.
Yeah. Now, Congressman DeSantis is a Republican on the political spectrum in the conservative mold of the present governor. Would it be fair to say that?
I would say he's. He's you know, part of the Freedom Caucus in Washington, D.C. Very, very conservative. You know, Putnam is much more moderate. And you have other people in the race. You have Jack Blastavilla. You have a couple of other people. So I think in a field like that, someone like DeSantis could win. He ran for Senate last year. When Rubio got back in, he dropped out and then ran back for his congressional seat. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ran, and I think he can give Putnam a run for his money.
Speaking of Governor Scott, you've seen all the polling, of course, that shows that if he runs in the U.S. Senate race next year, we have a toss-up. First of all, is there any indication that he has given yet as to where he might run? And if he should not run, could Republicans still win that race?
I don't think they can win this race if he doesn't run.
Mm-hmm.
He's given almost every indication based on his policy. He just did a huge thing with the environment, very friendly to, you know, Haitian immigrants for an extension for 18 months, very friendly, you know, Puerto Rico, people coming from Puerto Rico. So a lot of his policies in the last few months indicate that he is running against Nelson.
Okay. One more final question, then I'm going to pass it over to David again.
Sure.
Will Donald Trump be the main issue in statewide elections in your state next year, do you think?
I think so. I think, you know, it's a referendum. It will be a referendum on him, like it was on Obama in the first 2 years. However, I think the fight will be worse on Trump. And a lot of the candidates will be forced in a box, whether they agree with certain things or they don't. And, you know, Trump is not on the ballot. And so this is something that's going to hurt Republicans because I think the enthusiasm will be significantly down.
Down. Interesting. All right. Thank you for that, sir. And David, let me send it back to you.
Sure thing. Doug, I wanted to go back to the U.S. Senate race and ask, Bill Nelson's been in the U.S. Senate multiple terms, is not a controversial figure, seen as more moderate but well-liked. How is he even vulnerable in this political environment, which seems to be trending Democratic, to any candidate?
Well, Scott has had a good year. You know, he's got really high ratings with the hurricane, but there's an asterisk there because there were some deaths in a nursing home, like a lot, and there was some calls to his cell phone, and it hasn't hurt him yet. In a campaign, he'll face major problems. Now, in this environment, I think he'll have a tough time beating Nelson. If it was in a normal off year, he probably could beat him. But in this environment, I think he'll have a tough time.
So it's not really about Bill Nelson. It's about Rick Scott as to why those polls look competitive.
Right, because he really got favorable coverage with the hurricane in the last few months. And the economy has been pretty good here. But really the hurricane has helped him. But again, this nursing home thing is something that's going to come back and cause him a lot of problems when he runs. And I don't know how he's going to get around that. So a lot of people die.
Yes. Oh, and that's always unfortunate. And a lot of times with these natural disasters, people can get too much blame, too much credit.
But the nursing home director the nursing home director called his cell phone. So it was the right campaign really could put the blame on him. I'm not saying that he's to blame, but he's really connected to this, you know. So I think in a general election, he's going to have a problem with that.
Yes, okay, that was a piece of information we didn't know. Well, I wanted to ask you about a candidate, or an official who's term limited that made a lot of news in 2016. Current Attorney General Pam Bondi, she chose not to prosecute the Trump University cases that were in Florida. Made a lot of news about that. I think she had been a speaker at the Republican National Convention at least once. But she's chosen, apparently, as I look at Politics One, not to seek any other office. Is either Politics One wrong, or is it true she's not seeking an office? And if so, why?
I think her popularity has diminished a little bit in Florida. She hasn't set herself up. The Trump thing hurt her. I would expect her to take a job in the Trump administration that's not to be confirmed by the Senate, so maybe working in the White House or something of that nature. But she was real close to him. She was one of the directors of the campaign in Florida, so she's real close to Trump, and that's what I think will happen with her.
Yes, and while that may not help you in the general election, it would help you seemingly in Republican primary anywhere in the country. Okay, well, that explains that pretty well then. Well, let's talk about the U.S. Congress. Obviously, the House is very much in play. And for it to flip or for it to remain in Republican hands, it seems like the party is going to perform well in several districts in Florida that are in play. Doug, tell us those races that you see in the Sunshine State that folks ought to be watching.
Yeah, there are a couple of districts in southern Florida. You have some retirements. Elena Ross, I think Latherman retired. You have one in Palm Beach. In Orlando, you have the Sanders district, which is 6, and Posey's district, which is 10. Districts that Trump won by 15 points, but in a wave election, even those types of districts can go down. So it's really all about Trump's approval rating, what happens with Mueller. You know, if he's still in the 30s and you have the Mueller, you'll have just a repeat of Virginia throughout the country, and it'll be a massive wipeout. And you'll see that throughout the country.
Yes. And real quickly, speaking of District 27, there are a litany of candidates running. But there was one lady that made headlines, and I don't recognize her name right off, and I don't want to pick the wrong person. But one of the candidates made some news with her experiences with alien abduction. What's been the in-state view of that? I know it's gotten a lot of national ridicule, if you will, but is anybody even paying attention to that in Florida?
Yeah, you know, in the primary, people bring that up. It was some news, you know, it was, I guess, a big joke. People were surprised by it.
Yeah.
Florida's
well,
kind of a
well,
weird
Doug,
state, though. It's not surprising, you know, so.
Yes. Well, Doug, one thing we appreciate you being on, but one thing we always like to do when people come on, if people want to follow you, read you, find out more about the Orlando Political Observer, tell us all the places where folks can find you online.
Sure. Right, they can just our Twitter handles are at Gravis Marketing or at ORL Politics. And same thing for Facebook, Facebook-Gravis Marketing or Facebook-Orlando Politics.
Yes. All right. Well, folks can see your information there and continue to follow your polls. I guess a follow-up question, are y'all planning on releasing another Alabama poll with anybody between now and the 12th?
Yeah, we'll release another poll about 4 days before the election.
Oh.
So
all right, so about the
– we'll keep an eye out for that.
7th, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, really.
Definitely so. Yeah. Well, thank you, Doug,
well,
for all the good information.
Thank you for
yes.
having me.
Thank you,
you,
sir.
All right, that was
– All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Doug Kaplan of Gravis Marketing and the Orlando Political Observer and really helping us with Florida. Obviously, you got to have somebody in the state of Florida if you want to cover national politics because it is one of the swingiest swing states there is. Well, it seems like, Catherine and Tim, you wanted to make another point on Alabama, or you may want to respond to the poll results that Doug shared with us. So if one of you or both of you wanted to make another point there, I can go to one, then the other, and then we'll move on to the next thing. Catherine?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I just wanted to comment that one of you said, you know, that those guys really like to party. And, you know, I think that's probably true, but it's important to remember that it's important to remember that sexual harassment is usually not about sex. It's about power.
Yeah.
And
I think this was Tim saying those are really party people. And Tim, don't take words out of your, I want to put words in your mouth, but I believe you meant they were loyal to the Republican Party, not that they like to put on party hats and throw down at the house party.
Actually, I was being very facetious about it.
Okay.
I think it's really important that we remember
that these are very serious charges, and the women that come forward and make these and tell their stories should be believed. They wouldn't do this if it wasn't. I mean, there's so much evidence that you don't come forward with these kind of allegations without they're almost always accurate. But there's been a lot of jokes going around about all this stuff, and it just makes me flinch because this is, you know, this guy is a predator, and he uses power to take advantage of people, and it's, you know, wrong on so many levels. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to keep my mind a little bit about that.
Well, honestly, that's why I say I think Tim was meaning party is in political party, because honestly, what Roy Moore did back in the late 70s was the kind of thing you wouldn't do in a big crowd, because if you had people knowing about it, people would smack him down literally.
Well, people did know about it.
After young
people
ladies
did know
at
about
14
it. And
15.
People did know about it. I mean, it was like a big, you know, public secret that everybody knew about it. And that's the other part of this that's really shameful, is all the people in his office knew he did it. So why didn't they come forward? I mean, there's just a lot. We have a lot of work to do in our society about these matters, and it's sad that we are at this point. But we all hope that it puts us ahead of so that we can stop it. You know, it's just ridiculous. I'm so disappointed in so many people that I used to really respect. Actors, politicians, writers, everybody.
You know, there's a lot of people around the country that deserve a disappointment right now. And what Weinstein and some of those guys did was absolutely terrible. Let's be clear about that. And I want to be just as clear about what Roy Moore did was even beyond that.
Yeah,
even beyond that.
Right.
Those were children. 14-year-old children. I mean, and the guy is in his 30s. What is wrong with somebody like that? That would go chasing after teenage girls. Good grief. And then a generation later, he denies it.
Yeah.
It's sickening. And how could anybody in their right mind continue to support this guy? Have they deluded themselves into just saying, well, it's all lies from the liberal media, blah, blah, blah? No. They've made it into a political thing. They're in denial over pure, unadulterated politics. If this was a Democrat that was doing that, they'd be ready to hang him. You know.
Yeah, well, look at
hypocrites. Politically, man. He should be hung. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, public hangings don't happen in the country
anymore.
No, I mean,
David, they would be ready to publicly hang him for real.
Well, we have our... The New York congressman that actually in many ways gave us Trump, Anthony Weiner. He's probably the closest we have, and I'm glad he never appeared on my ballot to have to make a decision on him. Because to me, it would be a pretty easy one at this point. No.
And what did we do with him? What did we do with Anthony Weiner?
He no longer served.
Well, we kicked him right out of Dodge, and he went to jail.
Yeah, exactly right. Let's kind of use this to segue into, you know, not as serious an incident, but not good. I mean, because what he did was wrong. That picture was, you know, probably beyond sophomoric. But a pretty popular senator in Democratic politics, Al Franken, a picture was taken. There's apparently something about a skit. Now, obviously, there's no pictures to look at there, but you could hear the description, and he's coming to fire. Now, he has owned up to it and apologized. But we were talking during the week, and I think I brought up Bob Livingston, 20 years ago. The Republicans turned Bob Livingston out because they wanted to show that they were different at that time than Bill Clinton. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Al Franken as a way to juxtapose against Donald Trump, Roy Moore and others, and see what happens. Catherine, what were your thoughts late in the week when the photo and other things came out about Al Franken?
Well, actually, I don't think – I mean, the photo was offensive and in really bad taste, but actually the other thing was probably worse. So he what she said was that they were practicing their skit, and he forced himself on her and kissed her and, stuck his tongue down her throat. Sorry, listeners. I know that's kind of a graphic description. And was very forceful. And to me, that's more shocking than the sort of, like you said, sophomoric picture. At first, when I heard about this, I was like, okay, he's got to go. Like, he's just got to go. Like, this, we can't let this happen. But I saw an interview with the woman whose name I just can't remember, Luann Tweeden, maybe. And she said that she accepted his apology, and they asked her point blank, should he resign? And she said, no, she's not calling for him to resign. That's up to the people of Minnesota, and that she was satisfied with the apology. So I guess if she's satisfied with it, then we should be. Like, if I don't know. I'm really torn about it. I was really disappointed. It did happen before he was an elected senator, if that matters at all. I don't know if it does or not. But, you know, I love him. I loved him. I thought he might eventually be a good presidential candidate, not anymore. But he's been really strong on a lot of important issues. So it's just really, it's really hard. I would not be shattered if he was to resign. But I do think that since she, I don't like to use the word victim, but the woman who was accosted is okay with him staying, then I guess we should be too. I don't know. Like I said, I'm the fence about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then there's the actions, and then there's the appearances of how it all is, and it's how the right-wing media is going to use it. You know, if they're going to talk endlessly about some Hollywood producer that the average American had never even heard of, other than the little graphic that would come up before one of the movies, The Weinstein Company. That was the only familiarity I had with Harvey Weinstein before. Al Franken is actually a U.S. senator. They're going to equate, if the next five Republicans come out and did something just like Roy Moore, they're going to be, well, those six guys are equal, and Donald Trump, let's say seven, to what Al Franken did. And that's just the way they operate. And so the movement may be more important than the man in this case. And that's what
I'm not like.
If he moves on, and I really like Al Franken too, but if he has to move on and they put another Democratic senator in his place, so be it. So we can just push back harder on Roy Moore and others. Tim?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that option either.
Yeah. Tim?
Well, I mean, how's this going to play out? Is it going to be perceived as abuse or a mistake in bad taste? Which way is it going to be seen? I tend to think because he was a member of Saturday Night Live, and their specialty was black comedy, let's face it, irreverent comedy, that at least the stage photo was just that. It was just humor in bad taste that some people who like their humor like that would find funny, including probably Al Franken in his comedy days. Now, the thing about grabbing the woman, kissing her, and forcing his tongue down the throat, now, that kind of bothers me a little bit. I do not see where he would have a good explanation as to why he would do such a thing. And that particular episode is not in keeping with what we hear about Al Franken from those who know. For instance, he has stayed right beside his wife for many years as she has struggled through alcoholism, among other things. And a lot of the people that work with him on Saturday Night Live, a lot of the females in particular, have come running to his defense. Even Victoria Jackson, who's not known to be a friend of the Democratic Party, I might add. She's the exact opposite. And every one of them has talked about what a great gentleman he was, how he always promoted women's rights, how he always promoted women's empowerment in the workplace, for instance. And so it's a very regrettable situation. But, you know, there is political reality, too, that you were alluding to, David. And the question is simply, is he going to be able to survive this? Are they going to lump him in with it? On the day it broke, I turned into Fox News at four different times, separated by about 5 hours. And every time I turned over there, guess what they were talking about? Well, they were talking about Al Franken. Every last time, with panels and this and that and the other, and they'll beat it to death, and they'll do exactly what you said. They're going to lump them all together. They're going to make him and Moore equal, and they're going to say, well, if you guys don't get rid of Franken, why should we get rid of Roy Moore? Or why should you say anything about Donald Trump? Or this one or that one? And politically speaking, they may think they got a winner here. I just don't know. And I don't
know, I mean,
what
obviously
his fellow senators are going to choose to do about this.
Well, they are going to have that. They're going to have an ethics investigation at his request.
Yeah.
So hopefully that, you know, we'll see how that.
There will be
comes
hearing.
Out.
It's kind of like the old line. Oh, there will be beatings. There will be hearings. And we'll hear lots about it. It'll be, I guess they can't do Benghazi and email anymore. So this photo will take the place of it, no matter if Moore got elected in their mind, because they could, and they could drive the coverage. And that seems one of those overriding stories is the way that our media coverage is. People covering the news, and then you cover the news from right, and people covering news from the left, to be fair, but obviously Fox News with very big ratings has a hold on a segment of the country in which that's the lens in which they get to view everything from, no matter how distorted a funhouse mirror that is. Let's talk about one more story, and this is also kind of, it's because it's a ranking, it's meaningless, but given that there's a perception to back it up, it does mean something. And that was a World Index looked at, you know, the inflations, and it's pretty much always number one. Well, they ranked Germany number one, and they dropped America to six. I've been trying to pull that thing up on my computer because I found it on CNN earlier today, and I'm not seeing it to know all of the details. But the override of people, whether they're right or wrong, ranking America is sixth in the world and just overall influence and leadership. That's just unheard of. Catherine, when I sent you this story, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, I wasn't surprised. I think, you know, our current president has done so much damage to our international reputation that this is what happens. You know, our ranking as a world leader goes down, our respect in the world goes down, and then, you know, ultimately the rankings reflect it. So I don't know why anybody would be surprised. I mean, it's a terrible hit, but.
Yeah, and it's the nation's brand index. You know, Tim, I've heard, you know, Angela Merkel's now the leader of the, Angela Merkel's the leader of the free world, but dropping behind four other nations, quite surprising. Tim, what was your reaction?
Well, I do have some of the details here in front of me, and it's the Anhalt-GFK Nations Brand Index. We were the top, and now we are sixth. When I seen it, honestly, I was surprised we were that high, considering who is in the White House right now. They rate it on several categories. How the government's operating, how your exports and imports are doing, how your culture is doing, how your people are living, tourism, what people from other countries say when they visit your country, and the one that really killed us, I think, which was immigration and investment in foreign markets. The drop is because of Donald Trump. Spokespersons for that organization said that the America First thing is not something that is playing well, not only with overhyped this country, but with, you know, about every country in the world. Interestingly enough, right after Bush was reelected, and that Iraq war was going so badly. We actually fell to number seven one time in this. So Trump will be sad to know that he didn't set the record. He's not number one. Not yet, but he's getting there.
This is the first year of his presidency.
Yeah, so along with Germany, number one, there's France, England, Canada, Japan, then us, and right behind us, Italy, Switzerland, Australia, and Sweden. And like I said, frankly, I don't know how we managed to even remain as high as number six. And don't you think our credibility cratering around the world is going to hurt us every way possible, including economically?
And we've started to see the numbers that our economy's growing less. Another one, and I think we've mentioned it on the show, I know we've sent around articles, tourism has already started to drop and seems to be going to continue to drop. Not intrastate tourism, but people coming from outside of Nashville wondering if they can even get in. And so tourism, some like Doug Kaplan, is a big piece of the economic puzzle. And it's a great one to get because it helps you so many ways. People stay in your hotels. They pay your hotel motel tax. They go to your restaurants. They buy souvenirs. They go to other events. They ride in taxis or Ubers or whatever. I mean, almost every dollar spent is new money from another country. I mean, it's such a economic boost, and Donald Trump's killing that due to the way he approaches things. But, hey, don't worry, guys. Donald Trump came back from Asia, and he is right on the pulse of the country. Don't worry about the war. Don't worry about these ratings. LeVar Ball is what you really got to focus on. LeVar Ball's level of gratitude, if he would be appropriately gratitude, there is no problem we can't fix in America. But LeVar Ball is a problem in our nation, and we got to fix this. Catherine, did you even have any clue who LeVar Ball was before yesterday?
Oh, is he one of those basketball players from California?
Mm-hmm. He's one of the daddies of basketball players of California. He's the daddy. I mean, he didn't even play the ball.
Okay.
He's daddy. I mean, even less significant in many ways. He probably gets too much attention from the sports world, but now the leader, or the guy that holds the job of what used to be called the leader of the free world, is taking time out of his schedule to make him topic du jour. Tim, what do you think of this?
How many times have I said just shoot me now and really mean it? I mean, my favorite part of this is when he informed the three players that they could thank his good friend, the president of China. His good friend, the president of China, is this the same guy that he was just literally screaming about last year, how the Chinese had robbed America blind and had done this and done that? He was going to see to it that wasn't going to happen. And all of a sudden, these three young men are home, thanks solely to the efforts of his good friend, the president of China. I was eating cereal when I heard that particular thing on television. I actually spit Raisin Bran out on my counter. I want y'all to know that right now.
This is just classic Trump throwing out the baby with the bathwater, because here's the thing. The three basketball players from UCLA who shouldn't have been shoplifting what they shoplifted anywhere in the world, but much less a country like China that's not the home country. Crimes anywhere. You must commit crimes in your own country. We learned that from a kid in Singapore several decades back. But they all thank Donald Trump. Who's to say that the other two players' parents didn't thank Donald Trump? Who's to say Mrs. Ball didn't thank Donald Trump? So basically, we've got about nine people involved here, and one out of nine didn't show the proper gratitude, but he wants to put all three of them in jail. Seems kind of unfair. in a lot of ways. But that's kind of how Donald Trump does. He paints with a way too broad brush, and there's no idea of nuance.
We should have a segment on this show.
Leadership.
We should have a segment on this show about how Donald Trump actually wants to be treated as an emperor, because I really believe that's what it is. Don't y'all think?
Yep.
That?
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely much a royal quality. He does not know. He doesn't know why George Washington thought the way he did back when he gave up the presidency and said that America shouldn't have a monarch. Well, until next week, I want to thank Doug Kaplan. It's been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night,
y'all.
Guys.
Night, everybody.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.